Sorelli was furious. She had not been able to finish her speech. The managers had kissed her, thanked her, and run away as fast as the ghost himself. No one was surprised at this, for it was known that they were to go through the same ceremony on the floor above, in the foyer of the singers, and that finally they were themselves to receive their personal friends, for the last time, in the great lobby outside the manager's office, where a regular supper would be served. Here they found the new managers, Monsieur Armand Moncharmin and Monsieur Firmin Richard, whom they hardly knew. Nevertheless, they were lavish in protestations of friendship and received 1,000 flattering compliments in reply, so that those of the guests who had feared that they had a rather tedious evening in store for them at once put on brighter faces. The supper was almost gay, and a particularly clever speech of the representative of the government, mingling the glories of the past with the successes of the future, caused the greatest cordiality to prevail. The retiring managers had already handed over to their successors the 2 tiny master keys which opened all the doors, thousands of doors, of the opera house. And those little keys, the object of general curiosity, were being passed from hand to hand, when the attention of some of the guests was diverted by their discovery, at the end of the table, of that strange, wan and fantastic face with the hollow eyes, which had already appeared in the foyer of the ballet and been greeted by Little Jean's exclamation, "The opera ghost!" There sat the ghost, as natural as could be, except that he neither ate nor drank. Those who began by looking at him with a smile ended by turning away their heads, for the sight of him at once provoked the most funereal thoughts. No one repeated the joke of the foyer. No one exclaimed, "There's the opera ghost!" He himself did not speak a word, and his very neighbors could not have stated at what precise moment he had sat down between them. But everyone felt that if the dead did ever come and sit at the table of the living, they could not cut a more ghastly figure. The friends of Firmin Richard and Armand Moncharmin thought that this lean and skinny guest was an acquaintance of Debienne's or Poligny's, while Debienne's and Poligny's friends believed that the cadaverous individual belonged to Firmin Richard and Armand Moncharmin's party. The result was that no request was made for an explanation, no unpleasant remark, no joke in bad taste, which might have offended this visitor from the tomb. A few of those present who knew the story of the ghost and the description of him given by the chief scene-shifter—they did not know of Joseph Bouquet's death—thought in their own minds that the man at the end of the table might easily have passed for him. And yet, according to the story, the ghost had no nose, and the question in person had. But Monsieur Moncharmin declares in his memoirs that the guest's nose was transparent. "Long, thin, and transparent," are his exact words. I, for my part, will add that this might very well apply to a false nose. Monsieur Moncharmin might have taken for transparency what was only shininess. Everybody knows that orthopedic science provides beautiful false noses for those who have lost their noses naturally or as the result of an operation.